This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and it's our Friday Week in Review. So let's talk about the politics of reopening, shall we? Joe Biden forces Governor Baker's hand on teacher vaccinations as he makes his own push to put kids back in classrooms.
Let's treat in-person learning like an essential service that it is. And that means getting essential workers who provide that service, educators, school staff, child care workers, get them vaccinated immediately. They're essential workers.
Governor Baker already wanted kids back in classrooms, so he moved teachers to the front of the vaccine line.
We're announcing that educators, early educators, and school staff will be eligible to begin signing up for vaccine appointments starting on March 11th,
yes,
which is next week.
And that is the mayor of Gloucester expressing her excitement in the background there. But not everyone has been excited about it. Here's Radio Boston caller Joan from Wellesley summing it up this week.
I am not in favor of the teachers getting pushed up. The people over 65, people who live in public housing, and people who have disabilities who are at risk of really getting sick and dying are not going to have enough room to get their appointments.
Now, all this as the state took the next step in reopening and available vaccine appointments failed to keep up. Meanwhile, some really interesting dynamics playing out in the state's progressive politics. We're going to talk about all of it, and we will start with all things reopening. Call us and join the conversation. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So joining us this week, we have Wilnelia Rivera, a Democratic strategist, founder of Rivera Consulting. Wilnelia was chief strategist for Representative Ayanna Pressley's successful 2018 congressional campaign. We also have Joe Battenfeld, Boston Herald political columnist. Wilnelia, Joe, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So there is no point in starting anywhere other than teachers and schools because that seems to have been the story of the week. It struck me the causality between a presidential announcement and then the governor's actions less than a day later. That seems like a different dynamic than between the Commonwealth and the federal government in 2020. Any reaction on that, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I think it indicates that President Biden is a lot more in tune with organizations like the teachers' unions and teachers themselves. And, you know, it's a traditional Democratic base, so he's more responsive to that. And, you know, you could argue either way that the teachers got moved up too fast or they didn't, you know, that they should be moved up fast because we need to open schools. But I think any groups that get moved up, I think I'm happy for. I think we need more people being vaccinated. And I do think we need to get the schools back to in-person learning.
And Wilnelia, let me ask you, in your mind, this move by the Commonwealth to move teachers up this week, is that catching up on something the Commonwealth already should have been doing? Or is it a strategic pivot that was forced by the federal government and is a trade-off we might not necessarily have needed?
I mean, I think it's an indication of having a presidential administration that is trying to create a more national approach to dealing with this pandemic. And I think the unfortunate part that we're continuing to experience on a daily level is that, you know, our healthcare is based on competition. And because our healthcare is based on competition, we're unfortunately putting, you know, vulnerable populations up against teachers, against students, against, you know, small business owners, against waitresses. You know, I can go on with the list. And, you know, I think really what this begs the question for all of us as we continue to go through this recovery is what kind of healthcare do we want? Do we want a healthcare that's based on competition, right? Where this is where we find ourselves in the times of crisis, right? Where we're literally trying to say who has more dignity or more humanity to have access to the vaccine. And most importantly, we're also seeing what's happening on the ground where there's places that are getting, you know, access to vaccinations, but then you have people that aren't from those communities coming and getting access to those vaccinations as well. So I think that we have a really hard problem here.
Yeah, I want to pick up on a bunch of that, Will Nelia. And let me just throw the number back out, 800-423-8255. Listeners, what's your take? Should teachers have been moved to the front of the line this week? And your reaction to the push to open schools, elementary schools fully in person in April. So Joe Battenfeld, to Will Nelia's points, I'm going to play two pieces of sound for you, because the day of the announcement on teacher vaccinations, we had a teacher, Takeru Nagayoshi, who's an English and research teacher in New Bedford. He was the 2020 Massachusetts Teacher of the Year. He picked up on, after that caller Joan, which we heard at the top of the show, he picked up on the themes when Nelia was just sounding. Here he is.
I can't really speak to who should be prioritized and why. Obviously, I'm sort of biased as an educator, and will stand by my belief that teachers who are at the front line working with your students, with your children, deserve to be vaccinated and protected is an important cause, especially if you're pressuring us to reopen. But I also think it's important to acknowledge that in a scarcity model, that may come at the expense of others.
So then Almi Abeda, who's the superintendent of the Chelsea Public Schools, followed on talking about vaccinating other essential workers in schools.
I think one population that's been left out are our essential workers, our custodians, our security guards, our buildings and grounds. For them to have that opportunity is amazing. They are our silent heroes throughout this pandemic and faithfully coming in every single day.
So vulnerability and competition, Joe, when vaccines are scarce, and that has been the governor's line. Hey, vaccines are scarce. I do want to ask you, structurally, is that the only problem we have right now that's pitting one essential worker against another? If we had enough vaccines, would this problem go away? Or do you think there's something else structural going on?
No, I think it is primarily because of a lack of vaccines right now. And we unfortunately have to pit these groups against each other. And it's unfortunate that a group like the teachers has a very powerful teachers union and backing them. And maybe groups like grocery workers don't, you know, they have a union, but it's certainly not as strong as the teachers union is. And, you know, I think that Governor Baker is sort of haphazardly, reopening things, and, shutting down vaccination sites, opening new funneling people to central vaccination sites, then not doing it. So I think we don't have a really strong, sound policy in our own state for people to, you know, like the grocery workers seem to be being left behind in my view. Why is that? Yeah, why is that, you know, might be a question for the governor to answer, why he hasn't prioritized them. So it's a difficult situation, but I do think the governor seems to be flipping and flopping around, you know, and he grudgingly agrees to vaccinate the teachers, but there's no plan, as far as I can tell, to accommodate all these 400,000 new people that are going to be flooding the vaccination sites. They're already overloaded. There's no plan to accommodate that. So what's going to happen is probably the site's going to crash again.
So listeners, do you agree with Joe? Is the reopening plan and the vaccine rollout haphazard, as he's described it? Are we leaving some essential workers behind when we're prioritizing others? Also, have you gotten your vaccine yet? Have you been trying? 800-423-8255. Well, Nelia, this movement of teachers as essential workers by Joe Biden is an interesting one. One of the things that is a compare and contrast is at the beginning of this pandemic, there were sets of essential workers, for example, grocery store workers, medical, frontline medical workers, who didn't have an option to stay home. And at least last year, teachers did, when we closed down schools, and even as we started to reopen schools, at least some teachers had an option to stay home. If they are now sort of formally designated by the president as essential workers, does that set up a different expectation going forward? And could it be a different outcome in some, God forbid, future pandemic?
Mm-hmm. I mean, what I would say is that I think the most important part of this entire recovery is that we're going to have to look really hard at where our downfall were. And the reality is that even if we had all of the supply for vaccination available, what we've learned is that the absence of a state coordinated system, right, and also putting it in the hands of the private sector, even though we have a public health community that's been working on this for over two decades, really what it shows us is that we need coordination and that it takes the private sector and the public sector to come together. And we can't be pitting workers against workers, right? And I think the most important thing is here is that we're trying to compete our way to who deserves to live. And I think that that's the wrong question to be asking ourselves. And as we continue this recovery, we need to ask the hard questions and using our legislative chambers so that we can hold the hearings and hold the oversight conversations so that we can understand what went wrong and how do we prepare our infrastructure and how do we prepare our communities and then our economy to be able to better administer this as well. Because I also think part of the challenge too is that our healthcare system just was not prepared for this. That's just plain and simple. Just wasn't prepared for it.
So, Joe Battenfeld, I mean, if Winnelli is right that we are trying to compete our way through who deserves to live, which is a line that's going to really stick with me, that does suggest, man, we cannot be doing these conversations in the middle of crisis. This is planning that has to happen in advance. And yet we saw reporting in the Boston Globe this morning, there was a vaccine playbook. It got thrown out. You know, we can sort of build the next plane while we're flying this one. What kinds of conversations do we need to be having around future equity considerations?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that, it is tough to pit, to determine who lives and who dies. It's a very difficult question. But I do think that we were prepared in some respects for this pandemic. If you talk to the local boards of health, they've been planning for something like this for a long time, all across the state. And yet they were pretty much shut out of the vaccination program by the governor. And now we're spending $1.1 million a year. We just had a story in the Herald today. $1.1 a week just at Fenway and Gillette alone to these private companies that are running these vaccination clinics, when in fact we could have had a state system set up so we didn't have to spend all this money and we go to the local boards of health. So I do think there are definitely structural problems that were ignored by the governor or that certainly I think a lot of people were prepared for the pandemic, but they're not being included in the conversations right now or in the vaccinations.
Let's go to the phones. They're coming in now. 800-423-8255. Liz is on the line from East Boston. Liz, go ahead.
Hi there. My name's Liz, and I'm a teacher in East Boston. I'm just speaking on the vaccine situation. As a teacher, being in schools for, almost 2 months now with students, I feel that it is 100% necessary that we get vaccinated immediately, especially for the population of teachers in areas like East Boston, Chelsea, Everett. The rates are astronomically high at the moment, and they have been. And I feel that just as a teacher, we are interacting with hundreds of students daily. So it's integral and important that we are vaccinated. We are essential workers, and we have been. So I just wanted to speak on that behalf. And I do feel that it is unsafe for Governor Baker to ask that all students be in person without each teacher having the opportunity to be vaccinated.
Thanks for that, Liz. I'm going to add Janie here in Lowell. Janie, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I am high risk. I have, two or more things. I only got my permission to get my vaccines 2 weeks ago. I think teachers should get vaccinated, but I wish that the governor had given us a little more time because I cannot find a vaccine to save my life.
Janie, thanks. I appreciate you adding your voice. So I'm going to turn back to Winnelia and Joe now, because there you've got it. There's the tension right there, right? We've got Liz, who's a teacher back in the classroom. Janie, who I believe has two comorbidities, looking to get an appointment. We're going to be in this situation for a while longer. Is there something that we could be doing immediately differently? Winnelia.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that needs to happen immediately differently is that there needs to be a more transparent conversation between the legislature, the governor's office, the private sector, and our public health officials about what needs to happen for us to move forward. And I think we need to lead with equity, and we know where the high transmission communities are. And I think we need to account for that geographical impact in our approach, right? In terms of, you know, treating this like an emergency situation. What are the communities that literally are not in a position to be able to live through this in a way that is safe, or in a way that is comprehensive enough to stop another outbreak from happening, right? And I think that's also a big part of it, that we actually need to create a larger, more transparent table. I appreciate the governor and his daily press conferences, but they're not enough. We need to have much more transparency between everyone that needs to be at this table. And most importantly, we need to bring our local governments into the fold. They know best what's happening, and they have been effectively shut out of this process as well. And we need to ensure that our public health officials are the ones that are driving this conversation as well. And we need to be honest about the fact that we still don't have the amount of vaccinations that we have. We can continue to, you know, make changes to who gets access to the vaccination or not, but we're going to be in this for a couple more months, much longer, probably through the beginning of next year. And I think we have to have much more honest conversations about what those trade-offs are. And we need to have a governor that wants to lead on equity. It's not, you know, we just need to have that. And if he doesn't prioritize that, then we're going to continue to need, you know, members from the legislature and the public to make that push. Because at the end of the day, we can talk about individual workers and individual people that should be accessing the vaccination. But I think we need to be real that, you know, if you're living in Shrewsbury or if you're living in Roxbury, the impact of COVID in your community is very different. And we need to be able to take stock of that and also how we're approaching this problem.
Let's grab another call here, 800-423-8255. We've got Gayatri in Chelmsford. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Gayatri. I'm a senior at high school, and my school's beginning to reopen. But my English class and I were having a discussion on how, A, we don't have the space for students to logistically be 6 feet apart and maintain social distancing. So even if teachers get vaccinated, the schools aren't prepared to continue student social distancing, which is why I think we should stay remote. I think the push for in-person learning doesn't help students' mental health, and it definitely doesn't help teachers' well-being. So that's why I'm kind of like, I wish our government would ask students and teachers what they want first.
Thank you so much for that call. And so, Joe, I'm going to turn to you here, and I'm going to add a little information. One of our colleagues is actually giving us information real time because there's a meeting at the state level going on, and DESE Commissioner Jeff Riley has said that he's been given permission today to give a sneak preview of a peer-reviewed study soon to be published, showing that there was no significant difference in staff or student cases of COVID where the distances were 3 feet versus 6 feet. Of course, CDC guidance clearly is 6 feet, and that's what Gayatri was just talking to us about. We've been talking about teachers and vaccines. This does get back to a plan to put students fully back in school, starting with elementary school students in April. Is that too soon, or is it time?
I think it is time to move toward in-person schooling for everybody. And as long as parents have the option of declining that and continuing to go remote, I think it's okay. And it seems like that's what the state is moving toward. But we do have to have a plan to deal with it. Like the point that the caller made was excellent, that that's great, let's throw all the students in, but we don't have space to make, you know, to keep people socially distant. And I, you know, 3 feet or 6 feet, I think obviously 6 feet is safer than 3 feet. So I don't know what that new information that the state has, but I do think there's not enough planning in general being, and decisions are being made quickly and sort of on the whim of, like, the Biden comes out and says teachers should be vaccinated. So Baker comes out within hours and says, fine, we'll vaccinate teachers, but we really have no plan to do that. And the other caller made an excellent point that they're going to be not be able to get a vaccination slot because all 400,000 teachers and staff are going to be all of a sudden flooding the zone. So there's no planning for that. And I do agree that equity is a big problem, you know, funneling people to these mass vaccination sites like Gillette Stadium that are kind of in the middle of nowhere did not help, you know, vaccinate people in the hardest hit areas.
Let's go to the phones here, 800-423-8255. I've got a bunch of callers I want to get. Let's start with Francine in Bedford. Francine, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a pediatrician in Bedford, so I'm care for kids from newborns all the way up to 25, and there's just been an explosion this time of year, but more so with COVID and depression, anxiety, you know, kids being hospitalized, spending hours and hours just hanging out in an emergency room trying to find a bed for suicidal ideation. And I believe that we need to get the my students back into the classroom and get the teachers vaccinated as soon as possible. And our as a community pediatrician, we are used to giving vaccines and can provide 200 to 300 vaccines a day if we need to during the flu season. So we just need, you know, the state, and I think every provider is willing to get their patients vaccinated when there's enough vaccine. So
Francine, thanks so much for that call. And I do want to point our listeners to the fact that a colleague of ours at WBUR, Lynn Joliker, has been doing some great reporting on the issues around mental health beds available for young people, especially now. So that's more that you can follow there. I want to grab at least one more call here before we go to a break. Let's get Jim. Jim's in the car in Danvers. Jim, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to say I am a mid-50-year-old waiter who works in downtown Boston. I have been back to work since July, inside taking care of unmasked patrons. Groups change every night. And I feel like recently the vaccination process has become somewhat politicized, and those of us in the restaurant community who do have a higher chance of being exposed are kind of being pushed aside. Love your show. Thank you very much.
Love having you call, Jim. Thank you, and take good care. So let's do this. I think Wilnelia Rivera, Joe Battenfeld, hang on. We'll go to a break. We've been talking about teachers and schools. Jim is raising issues just about the larger reopening and the safety of everybody. And we did have a loosening of restrictions on restaurants that began Monday. So we're going to go to a break. Callers on the line, hold on. Callers who want to call in, keep coming. Wilnelia, Joe, sit tight. We'll be back in a minute, and we'll pick up on the larger reopening. You are listening to Radio Boston's Week in Review. I'm Tiziana Deering. We have been having a thumping conversation about the politics of reopening this week. We have two panelists, Joe Battenfeld of the Boston Herald and Wilnelia Rivera of Rivera Consulting, and lots of you listeners calling in. We invite you to continue to do so. We're going to talk about the larger reopening now. Phase three, step two happened on Monday. Indoor performance venues opening at 50%. Restaurants no longer with capacity restrictions as long as other social distancing measures are respected and the 90-minute table limit is respected. Are we taking the right steps? Is it too much too soon? Do you feel safe? Do you feel anxious and ready? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I'm going to start in with a call real quick. We've got Kathy down in Barnstable. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi. I'm a hairdresser, and I come from a family of hairdressers. And I have to say, when we started with this rollout of reopenings, and we were a May 25th, Phase one, essential service reopening, that me touching you to make you look pretty was essential. When my chiropractor was using his iPhone for an adjustment and my, you know, physical therapist wasn't seeing any patients, and we were like, okay, fine, we can make this safe. We can make this happen. But we have been touching people for 10 months, hoping every day, okay, I hope this client is being as safe as she says she is. I hope this one's 1 degree temperature doesn't mean anything. I hope. And then when they rolled out the vaccine and we realized we weren't on it at all, like we were so essential that we were phase one opening and we're not listed on it at all in any demographic. And I know part of it is we have no representation because we're not union. Now, also let me preface this with the fact that I realize there are so many people that need to have it. And I'm thrilled to wait my turn, but I'm just kind of amazed.
Yeah, I'm so glad you called and added that voice, Kathy. Thank you, Kathy down in Barnstable. And I want to note, May 26th, we actually had a salon owner on. They were in that first rave, and she was talking to us about sort of how they might practice safety and hold on, you know, for months until a vaccine came. I do want to grab just one more caller, and we'll turn to our panelists. Let's pick up Fred in Sagamore. Fred, go ahead.
Hey, thank you so much. I work in a grocery store, and we've been through this whole thing
since it started. You know, we haven't had anything extra. Our company is very good at making sure that the associates are clean. We have testing every day. But my concern is that we're always on the back burner. Nobody comes in and, you know, they don't follow. A lot of people don't follow with the math. They don't do the 60. It's amazing. And I understand that the virus could be on, you know, boxes and the trucks, and we try to clean everything. But still, you know, we're right out there. And yet we got people yelling at us, how come you don't have any kumquats today? You know what I mean? It's like,
oh, Fred.
You know.
Yeah.
It's like we're on the back burner. You know, you hear everything going on for, you know, teachers and this and that. And I see it. And, like, we haven't had the time off. And what do you do? The average grocery worker makes about $13 an hour. If they get sick or whatever, they have to take 10 days off to quarantine. Now, the company is very good, and it does try to help and pay, but there's only so much you can do. You know,
Fred, I'm going
to
take it back from you there. Fred, thank you so much. I mean, the specific reality of what you're dealing with there, Fred, I think it's really helpful, especially juxtaposed to Kathy. And I'm just going to grab one more because our callers today are really telling us what it's like on the ground. We've got Jen in Danvers. Jen, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a teacher in Revere, and I just wanted to speak to the point that Joe had made about teachers clogging up the appointment system. And I don't know if other districts have done this, but Revere got vaccines for their teachers. So we have a whole separate website that we've been using the past like day today really to sign up for a vaccine. So it's not going to impact the state website, at least as far as Revere goes.
Thanks for that, Jen. And that, I think that was in response to Joan's call from Wellesley that we played at the beginning talking about that. So back to Wilnelia Rivera, Joe Battenfeld, you guys were patient, but what a landscape those callers just painted. Wilnelia, what's running through your head as you hear all of that?
I mean, one of the biggest things that's running through my head is I've been listening to a lot of these calls and even our own conversation amongst the three of us is how much workers in our state and for that matter our country just don't have real rights. You know, one of the callers said that, you know, they're not in a union, so they don't have that kind of representation, right? Joe himself implied that, you know, part of the Biden administration's, you know, shift to putting, you know, the teachers in front of the line is because of the powerful, you know, relationship that the Democratic Party has with the teachers unions historically. And I think the important thing to raise here is that, you know, union membership is the lowest it ever has been in this country's history, right? And I think it says something about what kind of rights do our workers need, you know, after this pandemic, so that we don't find ourselves in a position where I am pitting the life of a hairdresser with the life of a grocery worker or a nurse, right? Or our children for that matter, right? And I think really it's begging us the questions of what kind of commonwealth and what kind of community do we want to be? Because again, we're not seeing each other's humanity in that moment. You know, I forget what the last caller's name was, but, you know, we want to be seen and we want to be witnessed, right? And I think that's a part of what, you know, some of the callers are sharing with us. But beyond that, from a structural perspective, we really need to talk about what are the rights that workers in this country need beyond classification, so that we're not finding ourselves in these kinds of situations where we're trying to fight to see who's responsible to pay for what. Right. So I just think it's an important thing to kind of bring to the conversation.
So that last caller, by the way, was Jen in Danvers. 800-423-8255 to add your voice. Callers have been coming in from all around the state, just letting us know your experiences right now, where you are in the line, how you're feeling about that, how you're feeling about the way the state is unfolding this vaccine rollout. Joe Battenfeld, back to you. So much since we took the break, so many voices. I want to let you just kind of go where you want to go with this.
Yeah, you have some really great callers today, I have to say. And I hope the governor is listening to them and other people in power in the legislature as well, because they are expressing what seems to be some unfairness that's taking place in the system that we have right now, is that grocery workers don't have as strong a union, make very little money, have very little political power. They are being totally shut out of this process. Hairstylists, the same thing. And it seems to be a little unfair as to how certain groups are being treated in this. And I understand people's frustrations. That's what comes across to me the most, is people's frustrations with this whole thing. And the fact that there is not enough vaccines right now. Hopefully that will change in a couple months. But right now, there's not enough vaccines to accommodate everybody. And they want to be moving so fast. Everybody wants to be moving so fast that some people are being left behind in all of this. And I just feel for those people out there. You know, the same thing we talked about, education, teachers, you know, calling. You know, my kids personally have been incredibly impacted by this pandemic and the fact that the schools have not been opened. I won't even get into details, but the mental health struggles are real. They are there, and it's a serious situation going on right now. And I just hope that the governor's office is listening out there today.
Let's bring in some more voices. 800-423-8255. We've got Alex in Norwood. Alex, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I think our school system should be open. We operate in a global economy. Our children are going to be competing on a global level with kids from across the planet. I don't know how inequity got brought in into opening up schools, but my kids have missed out on school now for 2 years, and they're mixed race. You want to give them equity, give them an education. That's the best way to attain equity. It's just time for teachers to do their job.
Thanks for that call, Alex. Let's add Beth in Newton. Beth, go ahead.
Hi, yes, I'd like to echo the fact that I agree that I work in a school. I completely agree that children should be back in school, although I don't think that people have a realistic understanding of what goes on in schools and what they have to do each day when you have a hybrid model. And not only that, what's going to happen when we bring back all of the children. It impacts everyone greatly. My second point is that the Commonwealth did not plan at all for the vaccine rollout. My main thing is I completely understand all the people on the front lines. They definitely deserve vaccine. Everyone deserves a vaccine, but it's like the Hunger Games out here. What happens is last two mornings, supposedly it's going to be available at CVS to get the vaccine. I literally am on the phone for 2 hours waiting. Then you finally get through and they say, sorry, no available appointments. So, and the other brief thing I just want to say quickly, my husband also for 3 weeks has been trying. He has two conditions, cannot get an appointment. So I think the process of the appointments is the problem. Thank you.
Thank you for painting that picture, Beth. Again, it brings it home for us. I'm going to take one more. Bill in Westwood. Bill, what's your experience?
Well, I'm a 70-year-old with two comorbidities. I've been trying for weeks to get an appointment. And basically, there is no line to get into. Well, there is a line, but it forms every time you call. So every day is a new line, and you never make any progress. So it is no system that we've got here in Massachusetts. We need to have some sort of a line to get into and stay in and advance as vaccines become available.
Bill, thanks for that. So, Wilnelia Rivera, there are policy decisions we could be making. We just, you know, heard from two people who say, I'm getting in this queue over and over again. I can't get through. I can't get appointment. Yes, the appointments are scarce because the vaccines are scarce, but queuing can be done lots of different ways. Are there short-term policy changes that we could be making that simply respond to the emotional wear and tear and time wear and tear that people are living through right now as they try to get vaccinated, even if they qualify?
I mean, I think this really goes back to our local governments, right? You know, we heard one of the callers who shared an example of how the city of Revere created a different website for their teachers to be able to access the vaccination system a little bit more seamlessly. You know, I think we need to look for these kinds of more localized solutions, right? You know, it reminds me as well of the days, you know, it feels like a long time ago compared to where we are now, but when our form of healthcare reform was implemented over a decade ago, you know, a at the heart of getting our insurance rate up, especially in hard to reach communities, was our community health centers, right? And our community health centers are really at the forefront of really, you know, of innovation when it comes to outreach for vaccination or enrollment, right? And I think we need to be looking more at that level of our healthcare system, because I think a part of it too is that, you know, we have some people that want to stand in line, and then we have some people that don't trust the vaccination. So we actually have a dual problem right now. We're focusing on the people that want it, right? But the truth is that we have both issues, and we need to be able to chew gum and walk at the same time on this one if we really do care about equity on this. And I think that, you know, again, we need the governor to not shy away from talking about the parts that make this a challenge, because we just can't be speaking to those that are in line or have the ability to get in line, right? We need to be able to talk to both sides of the aisle in that sense, right? And our community health centers and our doctors and our nurses and our nurse practitioners, and all those individuals within our healthcare system that aren't necessarily in hospitals are critical to delivering the service and delivering the kind of sort of social and emotional wellness needs that people also need. And I think most importantly, when you think about our legislature and you think about next year's budget, right, you know, because we're still in that, when the governor and the House and the Senate have their legislative debates about how we're going to fund our priorities in the state, we really should be looking at how, you know, our budget reflects the values of where we are right now and what we're becoming. So I also want to bring that up too, that in the short term, it also means how are we prioritizing the vaccination and recovery differently in our budget, and our priorities, to make sure that we're not just looking at this for just a year, but for the next couple of years.
I'd like to go back to the phones here, 800-423-8255. I'd like to pick up Janice in Beverly. Janice, go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that the governor reopening before everything else was in place is a huge mistake. I'm 69 years old, and I haven't been able to get an appointment online. And I've tried, like everyone else, many times. And I'm a retired teacher, so I understand what teachers are going through, and setting up a classroom is really difficult. So I just wanted to say that I think putting forth more people at a time when there's not enough of the vaccine to go around, and leaving behind those who have been in line for months, is a difficult situation. I think
Thank
he
you,
moved
Janice.
Ahead too quickly, opening up when so many people are exposed.
I'm going to take it back from you there, Janice. Thank you for that point. So Joe Battenfeld, what Janice said is on my mind. What you said a couple of minutes ago about the impact you've seen on your own kids, your family, is on my mind. Listening to all of these callers, and there are more, the lines are full still, listening to everyone, I do find myself thinking, how is our collective well-being, our mental health, our emotional health, our social-emotional health here in the Commonwealth right now? Are we okay?
I don't think we are okay. I mean, it's okay, as the phrase goes, it's okay not to be okay, but I do think that the government has failed us in this case, and our government, our state government at least, and to many extent, the federal government certainly has failed us, and that's certainly not helping matters at all. I think Janice, I think that was her name, the caller, I totally agree mm-hmm. that with her, that just opening everything up, restaurants to full capacity that are going to be happening without having enough vaccine for everybody without vaccinating restaurant workers is a mistake. And it indicates that he's sort of bending to political pressure to open up rather than making any sound policy decisions based on, you know, what's going out on the ground, what's happening on the ground there. And, you know, I think maybe we should have some kind of mental health discussion, you know, the legislature maybe call hearings on it or something, or, you know, because it's certainly becoming a major problem out there.
Let's hear from Julia, our last caller that we have time for today in Lincoln. Julia, go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to say that I think we need to demand a lot more of our representatives and the governor, because we shouldn't be fighting each other for vaccines. we shouldn't be forcing teachers to go back to schools. We need to look for solutions that are out there, but people aren't spending any time looking for them. And I think that's what we need to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia. So Will Nellia, I'm going to pick up on Joe's last point and Julia's point. We've got a couple minutes before we go to hubbubs here. The role of the legislature, we've talked about the governor. People have been hard on the governor today. Those calling in have been hard on him. There is a legislature as well, and there are all kinds of equity decisions to be made here. I know you work in electoral politics. How are we thinking about, or should we be thinking about, who we put in office in these next election cycles?
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, one thing I want to say about that is that it's hard to tie the woes of this pandemic and the difficulties that we're having with recovering with just electing new leaders, right? And you know, even someone that comes from this line of business, it's not always just about electing new leaders. It's also about, you know, holding our current leaders accountable and expecting more from them. And I think that the last caller, you know, was very clear in that point. So I think that it's a very important thing for all of us to remember here. The incumbency rates in Massachusetts are probably one of the highest that we have in the country. So the chances of you defeating an incumbent so you can get better representation are pretty slim. And the opportunities are far and few and in between. So what I would really encourage people to think about is your current legislature, your current representatives, and how are they representing to you right now? How are they voting on these issues? What are they doing to prioritize this recovery in a way that is different from years past? And that's the level of accountability that we need to be having towards our legislature, right? Because they're making decisions every single day. So it's not just about, again, electing a new set of leaders, although I'm always a fan of that. But again, because those moments are far and few in between, what we really need to be doing is talking to our current state representatives and state senators and demanding more. Asking why are we waiting to have legislative hearings about what's happening with recovery so that we can get on top of it in real time? We can't get to short-term policymaking if we're not opening the veil of what's actually happening. And the legislature has become more insular over the course of this pandemic, and I understand how and why. But what is the legislature doing right now to really lead, as opposed to just getting on the same public bandwagon of making it about holding the governor accountable? And I don't want to put the governor to the side on this, but I do think that it's important that we just don't barrage the governor, because we have a legislature that's also responsible. Yeah. And we need to have that conversation with them too.
All right. And on that note, very, very thoughtful. I do want to leave a little time here to end with our hubbubs, which are the local stories or events that caught our attention. Joe, do you have a short hubbub for us?
Yeah, and this sort of ties into what we've been talking about with the government's failure, the government failing us, is that ordinary citizens are stepping up. And the three sisters from Beverly have just started a new website, MA COVID Vaccine Finder, to help people get back vaccination appointments and send them text alerts when they're available. And our own government is not doing this. It's been up to ordinary people to step forward. This is about the fourth website that's come out from ordinary people to help people out, you know, that when our government has failed us.
All right. Hats off to the ordinary people. Will Nellia, briefly, do you have a hubbub for us too?
I do, in the same spirit, but a little bit differently. So as many of you know, unfortunately, you know, the frigid winter storms that hit Texas have been very damaging. But two local shelters, animal shelters, the MSPCA and the Northeast Animal Shelter, have been able to actually bring over 91 cats and dogs from shelters that in Texas. So if folks are looking to adopt any new cats and dogs, make your way over to MSPCA Angel or Northeast Animal Shelter.
Okay, I love ending any segment with puppies and kittens, so you get two thumbs up for that, Will Nellia. Normally, I would do a hubbub too, but I'm going to take advantage of being the host and do it differently. I'm going to bring a friend in from another part of BUR and do a hubbub after the break, so I'm teasing you with that. In the meantime, let's say goodbye to Will Nellia Rivera of Rivera Consulting and Joe Battenfeld of the Boston Herald, political columnist there. Will Nellia and Joe, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tiziana.
Thank you.
The fortunes of the marathon have been kind of a canary for us in this pandemic coal mine, and we have followed them all along with our friend WBUR's Alex Ashlock. So Alex is going to join me for a fully reported hubbub. Alex, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. I just want to mention that listening to the show, the marathon's important, but you and your guests were reflecting on some very serious things this hour. So I just want to put the marathon into that context as we have this conversation.
Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it. So we'll lift the spirits a little. The marathon was canceled. Yeah, canceled for the first time in its 124-year-old history last year. But there was a plan for the 125th. Set this up for us.
So we know it won't be run on Patriots Day. They made that decision back in the fall of last year. Earlier this year, the Boston Athletic Association said, you know, we're going to try to run the 2021 marathon in October. But they couched that announcement in this way. They said, if road races are allowed to take place as part of the Massachusetts reopening plan, the 125th Boston Marathon will be held on Monday, October 11th of this year.
Okay, so now the BAA made some follow-up announcements this week, and I really want you to say that they were good news for runners.
I think it's good news because they are using this phrase, in-person race. They're doing that. They're still planning for that, although it isn't going to look like a normal Boston Marathon has looked in the past. The BAA says there'll be a smaller field for the race. You won't see 30,000 runners like you usually do on Patriots Day. Maybe they'll try to limit the size of the crowd as well. It's not going to be the same, but hopefully it'll be somewhat like the traditional Boston Marathon.
Okay, so I see here sort of cautious happiness there. Some uncertainty?
Yeah, cautious optimism that you hear.
That's right.
All the time. It's clear there's some optimism, but it's also clear there's some caution because, as I said, the field size, we don't know what that field size will be. They haven't said when they're going to open registration for the in-person race. So those are big question marks. Tom Grilk is the president and CEO at the Boston Athletic Association. Had a conversation with him earlier today about just how difficult this challenge is for an actual marathon in October.
Unfortunately, the signal feature of this whole pandemic is uncertainty. You really can't know what's coming next. So right now, the vectors are pointing in a favorable direction. If all of a sudden there comes a variation in the disease from some other place or some other cause, then it could all change again.
Okay, so Alex, there is a second part to this hubbub, which has to do with the virtual marathon that the BAA did last year.
Right.
Tell us the news on that this week.
So they did this last year. They had this virtual marathon. It was only open at that time to runners who were actually registered for the regular marathon. I think about 16,000 people participated in it. But this year they're opening up the virtual marathon to 70,000 people. These can be people anywhere in the world. They can run wherever they want. They can establish their own courses. Last year when people did it, they ran in all 50 states, countries all around the world. You sign up. There's an entry fee. You run your 26.2-mile race wherever it is, and you get a finisher's medal just like you would if you ran the traditional race on the marathon course.
Okay, so we've got 30 seconds, Alex. Yeah. Alex, tell us briefly about the backlash that's happening for
this. Well, you know, some people train for the Boston Marathon their whole life. They try to qualify for the Boston Marathon, for a lot of their running career. And some people think, you know, why should somebody who runs a Boston Marathon or runs a virtual Boston Marathon in some other place, on some other course of their own choosing, why should they get a Boston Marathon finisher's medal? And, you know, I take their point, but as Tom Grilk told me today, you know, they're not trying to diminish the value of running the in-person Boston Marathon on the iconic course. They're just trying to open it up to more people to enjoy that experience wherever they are. And, you know, we're not in normal times. So, you know, I can't imagine feeling bad if I ran the in-person race and somebody else did it and got a finisher's medal. I just can't imagine spending any time on that.
All right, Alex Ashlak, thank you so much for being part of the hubbub.
Thanks for asking me.
Listeners, you were awesome today. Thanks for listening and joining us. Tune in again Monday for more Radio Boston.